Hi, and welcome to Aging in Place for every stage in life. What if you could visit or have a home that would accommodate anyone at any age, any physical ability, at any time? How cool would that be? That's what we're doing here at Aging in Place. Why me? Because I'm a doctor of psychology, and I specialize in physical spaces and health and wellness. Also, I love designing with intent at any age. Why now? Because we, the baby boomers, want to age in place gracefully, and we want our families around us as much as we can. And why you, the audience? Because we want you to experience what it's like to have a home that's safe, aesthetically pleasing, and that you can live in at any age, with any ability, at any time. I'd like to introduce you now to Aging in Place podcast for every stage in life. Hi, and welcome to Aging Place podcast for any stage in life. I am Dr. Debbie Lines, and I'm here today with my friend, Dr. Ken Gleitzman. He is an ophthalmologist, and also has a master's in public health, and that seems to be even more pertinent today than it did about a month ago. So I appreciate you joining us here on the podcast, Ken. A couple of things that I want to talk about is actually the COVID-19 virus, number one, and how it affects all of us from an eye point of view. And number two, I really would love to talk about our eyesight as we age, sort of the good, the bad, and things that we can pay attention to. Before we do that, I would love to have you share with us a little bit about your background.
Sure. So I have been in ophthalmology for decades, and I trained in the military, actually. I trained as an Army ophthalmologist as they paid for my medical school. And then I did a payback of a year for year. So it's 4 years of medical school and then an internship. And then I did 3 years of ophthalmology residency in San Francisco.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Then I did 4 years of payback to the Army in Augusta, Georgia, at a tertiary care hospital where I was the assistant chief of ophthalmology. Went into private practice there in ophthalmology and then moved to Hilton Head since it was the closest beach and we missed the beach in the mid-90s and have been here ever since. Except for a brief hiatus, I went for a couple of years to Oregon Health and Science University in Portland, Oregon, and did a preventive medicine residency for 2 years, which included a master's in public health in epidemiology and biostatistics. So that was sort of another level of exposure to healthcare. And now I'm in private practice in ophthalmology and use my public health interests in the practice of ophthalmology and sort of population medicine.
It's really interesting to me because really I consider you an educator because every time I've spoken to you and when we talk about whether it's eye health or now with this virus, you're very user-friendly and easy to talk to. And I think people can learn a lot. And that's why I thought this topic was so pertinent. From a psychological point of view, and we were talking about this morning, Ken, even from a design point of view, I have noticed personally as I've gotten older, I'm 66, that my eyes have shifted in quite a few ways. Can we really kind of start at the beginning and talk about the eye and maybe briefly an overview of through different stages in life what we can expect?
Sure. And, you know, this is one thing that we do. It's a complicated topic, but we sort of break it down to our patients on a lay level daily. So it's something that we do. That's what we do. So it is interesting. I mean, once you're full grown, your eyes are a certain shape, and that determines whether you're farsighted or nearsighted. And that doesn't mean those words don't mean much, but for a nearsighted person, when their eyes are full grown as a teenager, they can't see distance. And that's what nearsightedness sort of means at that age. People who are not nearsighted have great vision and they may be farsighted. They don't realize that until their eyes begin to change about in their mid 40s. So, okay. And the reason for that is because there's a zoom mechanism inside your eye that allows you to overcome the fact that you're, and cover up the fact that you're farsighted. So people will say, oh, I'll never need glasses. I see great, until they hit about 40 or 45, and then the wheels fall off.
Yeah.
And they can't see up close, and then they can't see intermediate, and then they can't see even at distance. And they end up having to correct for that in their mid-40s as opposed in their teens. And they never feel comfortable with that. So that all has to do with the eyes changing their ability to see with this zoom mechanism kind of failing them. And that's a result of the lens inside the eye becoming more and more rigid as you get older. And that's a normal, natural thing. And that changes the way you see at various stages of life.
Let me ask you a silly question, but years ago, 20 years ago, 40 years ago, 60 years ago, 100 years ago, was that still the evolution of the eye? In other words, as we got older, we just didn't see as well. We just didn't have glasses or contacts or the knowledge. Okay.
Yeah, that's right. That really hasn't changed. And that is totally, has nothing to do with the weakness developing in your eye. It has physically to do with the change in the density and hardness of the lens. And usually a 10-year-old has a very flexible lens and they can read a comic book on the end of their nose all day long. And, and that same person can't do that when they're 50 because the lens is no longer flexible. And by the time you're as old as I am, your lens has lost all of this flexibility and you're wearing whatever you need appliance-wise, glasses or contact lenses all the time when you're reading at least. So.
It's really interesting to me because I guess I don't realize all the different component pieces that. So from the time I'm 40, do I need to get an eye exam every year? Will my eye continue to deteriorate or does it hit sort of a set point and that's sort of where we land in the...
So typically the what we're talking about, this loss of zoom power, it's really called accommodation.
Okay.
You lose the ability to accommodate. That means to zoom in up close. About in your mid-40s, and that begins physically to be noticeable every couple of years. You need to add something to your correction until you're about in your mid-60s, and then you've lost all of your ability to accommodate, and then things are stable again. So it really is between mid-40s and mid-60s, after which you've already corrected everything. Other things are happening. There may be other things developing, but that particular process is finished.
Well, let's talk about other things that may be developing. Oh, it sounds like so much fun to talk about. All right. So as we get older, what are some things that we really need to pay attention to? And I guess the way I would frame this is I am coming into you for an exam. What are the kinds of things that you're going to be looking for during this time?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And actually, I bypassed one of your earlier questions was, do you need regular eye exams? Typically, one of the things that you need, other than the fact that you need to correct your refractive error, which we talked about, one thing is to have your eye pressure checked. Because one of the sneaking ways of sort of losing vision for some people is glaucoma, and you don't know you have it until you notice that you, typically your pressures are elevated, and that's one of the things that an annual eye exam can pick up on. It's no different
than
having eye pressure. Yeah. So eye pressure is something that is not like blood pressure. It's not. It doesn't relate to blood pressure, but it's similar. It's an analogy. So the internist checks your blood pressure and, you know, you don't know you have high blood pressure unless it's checked. Eye pressure is similar. And that means we use a device which measures the pressure inside your eye, which is sort of something that builds up by every day you have a certain thermostat setting in your eye pressure, just like your blood pressure. And those systems can go awry, and you can develop high pressure, which can actually cause really some difficulties with vision and loss of peripheral vision first, and it's something that can sneak up on you without you knowing. So So that's one thing.
Are you, is there a genetic predisposition to glaucoma? Is it something that is preventable, or that just an, it is what it is?
It's totally treatable. It's okay. Just, it's no different than having hypertension, high blood pressure, okay. High blood sugar. All those things are treatable, but you don't know you have them until you're tested for them. So we, that's one thing we do. And in simple terms, the other things are the lens inside your eye can change, and often does, not just gets firmer, more dense, but it and loses its ability to accommodate, but it can get cloudy, and that's a cataract. So a cataract is a very common thing we look for. And the other thing is the back surface of your eye, the inside, it's like the inside of a tennis ball being lined with cellophane. That would be the retina. It's like the film in the camera. Mm. So okay. The film in the camera is another thing that is complicated structure that we look at. And that's where things like macular degeneration and blood vessel problems can occur in the back of the eye that we look for.
Let's take a quick break. We're going to come right back. Can we talk a little bit about predicting cataracts and then what some of the options that are available now to correct that are? Sound good? We'll be right back here on Aging Place Podcast for any stage in life. Hi, I'm Dr. Debbie Lines. Design elements are psychologically and physically supportive and conducive to health and wellness. To learn more about what Lines on Design can do for you, for more information on certified aging in place and facilitative and supportive design, look for us at linesondesign.com. That's L-Y-N-E-S on design.com. We are back here at Aging in Place Podcast for any stage in life. I am here with my friend Ken Gleitzman, and we're talking everything eyes today. And it's funny, up until I was 40, I really had no problem. Once I hit 40, every year has been an adventure with eyes. And I'd like to talk about cataracts. We talked a little bit about macular degeneration and some of the other things that can happen, for example, with the retina. Is a cataract?
So a cataract is really just the clouding of the natural lens inside the eye. So just like a camera, if you open the camera and rather than a nice crystal clear lens that has some thickness to it, it's cloudy. And it becomes, rather than looking like clear window glass, the lens looks more like milk glass. It's a physical chemical change in the lens. And so that cloudiness, when it becomes clinically significant, and that's when it interrupts your activities of daily living, then the only thing you can do about that is have that cataract removed. And so,
am I going to know that I can't see, or do I become so conditioned to it that I don't know what I don't know?
No, that's a great question. And actually, it usually is a very slow process. And so people will say, yeah, I don't have any trouble, but I don't drive it. And so that's one of the early signs is poor night vision. Okay. Glare is another very, very common symptom of cataracts. And eventually people will say, I have so much glare that X, I can't golf, I can't read, or I can't do whatever it is they're trying to do. I can't work. I can't. Okay. I'm an accountant, and I can't see my figures. Sixers look like nines. And so if it really is just the cataract, then that is something that is easily fixed surgically. And that's really interesting high-tech procedure that we
do. What does that look like?
So a cataract operation essentially is an exchange operation. We make a tiny little incision in the eye, either manually or with a laser, and we remove that delicate lens, completely remove it from the eye, and then the eye has no lens. So then we replace it through that very small opening with an artificial lens, which is called an implant. And that implant can give you either, it can build the power of your glasses that you're wearing now into the implant so that you actually end up not just as good as you ever were, but better potentially.
Oh, wow.
And so people can actually opt to have various kinds of implants. For instance, some people will take the Cadillac procedure and opt for a multifocal implant. Mm-hmm. And so they can actually correct their near and their far vision. and be the envy of their friends because they no longer have to wear glasses at all and they don't have cataracts. So,
that's
the magic of modern cataract surgery.
Does your brain have to accommodate to that bifocal multifocal?
There is a little bit of an adjustment over a period of a month, but usually it's something you do just by using your eyes, and people will just reach for their reading glasses for a while and say, I don't know why I'm wearing these. I don't need them anymore.
Okay, so there's a habituation piece to that too.
There is a little bit of neuroadaptation, we call it. Yes.
Okay. And then from a procedural point of view, is it an outpatient surgery?
Usually it is a 30 minutes. The operation itself takes 20 or 30 minutes to do, and you have to go. It's a day surgery thing. You can't drive the day of surgery because you're just very lightly twilight sedated.
Got it.
But then you can go right back to doing all of your normal activities almost immediately.
Typically, do you have both eyes done with cataracts, or do you do one?
Simultaneous surgery, both eyes on one day is unusual. We never do that. We usually only operate on one eye, but we typically do them two weeks apart.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. And then do I come in and I am slightly symptomatic, and then is there a point where the insurance or Medicare says, okay, this is clinically significant?
Yes, there are some numbers that go along with the medical necessity part of it.
Okay.
But they're typical. I mean, if people are complaining, they typically already have those numbers. So their vision is dropped to a certain level on the eye chart. We do some glare testing and some other things. But today, ophthalmology has gotten so high tech. We use so much imaging, and there are incredible things we can do in the office. And one of the things we can do is be very precise with the implant calculations that allow us to precisely tell you exactly what you'll be seeing afterwards and so on. Very predictable.
Is it fun to do ophthalmology? It sounds like it changes every week.
It's unbelievable. Yeah, it's one of the great things is that for most of the things we treat, like cataracts, it's very grateful, and it's a life-changing thing that happens, and it's great for the patients, and it's great for the staff and the physicians taking care of patients, because it's very gratifying.
As we age, I love my contacts. Do you see people in their 70s, 80s wearing contacts? Is that, or I guess, is it if they have their cataracts and they go luxury, they don't need that anymore?
Both are true. Both are true. Okay. There are plenty of people, especially in our community, who are in their 70s and 80s putting their contact lenses in. But if they have cataracts, then they can have that surgery and build their contact lens correction into their surgeries.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's really interesting. And then glasses are kind of a fashion statement, too. It's really true. Interesting. I remember being a kid thinking, oh, glasses, bad thing. And now it's like, oh, glasses, which one will go with my fit? I'd like to ask about the retina. When I have heard people who have had trouble with a quote unquote, whatever this means, torn retina, it's been a pretty significant and serious situation.
Yes. So retinal detachments are what you're talking about. And typically the retina, as I said, is the inner lining of the eye. And it's a very delicate tissue, akin to lining the inside of a tennis ball with cellophane. And that cellophane can have a little tear, and there are many reasons for that. But sometimes that tear can evolve into a detaching of the entire retina, or partially detaching it. And you notice a shade coming down or up over your vision, and that needs to be surgically repaired relatively emergently. So we do that all the time, and our retina specialists do that surgery. And it usually is quite successful. Yeah, and mechanically replaces, puts the retina where it belongs and welds it in place either with lasers or other tools. Or gas, expanding gases, lots of things are used technically to do that. But it's something you can go through, and that needs to be done, you know, within usually about 72 hours of losing your vision because of the detachment.
What is macular degeneration?
So that's a really common, really serious condition that a lot of people have. Some people have a very mild case of it. We usually see this happening long before it becomes clinically significant. But essentially, it really is the aging of the retina in such a way that the retinal metabolism is interfered with. And it looks physically, you can tell a patient's developing this because they develop deposits of what are called drusen, which are sort of age spots in the eye. Mm-hmm. And it's just like age spots on your skin. If they are in the retina, they can interfere right. with the retinal function. So, and that is actually the macula is the center of the retina.
Okay.
And so it interferes with your central vision.
So again, is there, are you predisposed to this? Are you?
Yeah, it's genetic.
Okay.
And yeah, it certainly can. And there are some things at certain stages of the development of what, there are actually two different kinds in general, dry macular degeneration and wet macular degeneration. Mm-hmm. And the dry changes we see occurring very slowly, and they can be somewhat retarded or slowed down or stabilized by taking supplemental vitamins and things.
Oh, interesting.
And a lot of people do, and these have been widely studied and proven to be helpful at certain stages of dry macular degeneration. So we can pick it up, and that's another reason we see people routinely for their eye care who are developing this condition need to be staged.
You know, with about 30 seconds left, I would love to take a break again. And I'd like to come back and I'd like to talk about things like eye infections, when I need to go to the ophthalmologist, a little difference between an ophthalmologist and an optometrist, because I think that's also really interesting. And then I'd also like to chat with you a little bit about some visual changes that I'm noticing. Contrast, colors aren't as bright. As a designer, when I choose paint colors, it's really been interesting to me to see how they've shifted. So stay with us. We'll be right back with Dr. Ken Gleitzman in just a moment.
For more podcast episodes, links, information, and media inquiries, please visit our website at agingInPlacePodcast.com as we transition through life with the comfort and ease you deserve. Discover how you can create a home that will adapt to you as you journey through life and the changes it will bring. Please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as our host, Debbie Lines, and her expert guests discuss relevant topics to creating a home for all decades in life. Don't miss our weekly episodes of Aging in Place podcast for every stage in life.
We are back here on Aging in Place podcast for any stage in life. We're here today with ophthalmologist Dr. Ken Gleitzman, and we're talking all things eyes. And it's really fascinating because I think, again, as I said in the beginning, I think that you can really help make this discussion user-friendly, and it's really pretty complex and complicated, so I'm very grateful for that. It's fascinating, and I think it's always fun to have you captive, because I can ask all those questions that we really want to know that we're too embarrassed to ask oftentimes. And the first one is eye infections, sleeping in contacts, what's the difference between conjunctivitis? And now I heard that might even be a rare symptom of the coronavirus, all kinds of goodies like that. Because eye infections are, they hurt.
So, yeah, that's a good general topic, especially today with infectious diseases being in the forefront. And it is true that one of the symptoms of coronavirus, one of the types of coronavirus that we typically are not hearing about, happens to be really severe conjunctivitis. But a lot of viruses, in fact, the most common reason to have conjunctivitis, which basically itis on the end of any word in medicine means inflammation, and the conjunctiva is the white part of the eye. It's kind of the loose tissue, the non-seeing part of the eye. It's the thing you see when you look in the mirror,
right?
And it's red. And
right.
If it's really red, that's conjunctivitis. So it can be allergic, and this time of the year, typically
pollen,
it's allergic. Yeah. It's allergic and it's itchy. That means the conjunctiva is producing histamine, and that's why antihistamines work. So, and then the infectious kinds are more the yucky, sort of sticky, discharging mm-hmm. kinds, and they can be bacterial. Just skin bacteria, bacteria in your eyelid glands can cause bacterial conjunctivitis. Over-wearing contact lenses can cause conjunctivitis. Sleeping in your contacts, which you mentioned, also mm-hmm. not a great idea.
No, bad idea. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they cause infections in your conjunctiva. They also cause corneal infections, which are more severe and serious. Mm-hmm. And the clear covering of your eye that you wear your contacts over. So not a great idea. And then viral conjunctivitis are the real contagious things, which is where the coronavirus comes in. And that's what your grandkids are sharing with you when they yes. come back from school, and they're sharing that with their friends, and usually that's the way that spreads around.
So is the corona, well, I know the coronavirus is sort of a generic term for a kind of virus. The COVID-19 is the specific kind that we're experiencing now. Is the conjunctivitis that you're talking about, or that the infection, a symptom of this 19 coronavirus, this COVID?
You know, typically not. It hasn't okay. been shown. No, it's real. That particular virus, because of the way it attaches to certain cells, is a respiratory virus. So,
It
happens to be in the lower respiratory tract, and that's really where that virus gets seeded. Mm-hmm. There are other kinds of coronaviruses which cause the common cold and mm-hmm. Have been around in the human population for a long, long time in animals, and that can cause conjunctivitis because they attach to the cells of the conjunctiva. So it sort of depends on how specific viruses, what their target tissue is.
And I don't know about you, but I never realized until this pandemic how much I touch my eyes and face. You don't pay attention to it. And now I am very aware.
Yeah. So, yeah, and the reason that is, it's not because the virus likes your eyes so much. It's just because if you get that on your hands, and it is a mucous membrane, you're not actually touching the inside of your mouth as often as you are wiping your eyes, especially if your eyes are itchy and the allergies are there. So yeah, we do touch our eyes and our nose a lot, and a lot more than you thought a couple of weeks ago.
All right, I have a question for you. Roomy eyes. I have more gunk in my eyes as I get older. Is that a typical thing? It's almost like we babies have it, and as we get older, I've noticed that too. And then is there any difference in your tearing or tear duct or susceptibility?
Yeah, dry eyes are really kind of a general topic, and that dryness, just like dry skin, is something that really comes on with aging, and it's really, really common. And in the oftentimes, tearing is a symptom of dryness, and it actually is a reflex tearing because your eyes are dry. So your corneas tell your brain that they're dry, and your brain tells your tear ducts to start producing tears. So people will come in and say, I tear all day long, especially when I'm out golfing, and it's because they have an underlying dry eye condition. And it can come from the inflammation that is caused in the eyelids. So you have red-rimmed eyes, and that's all kind of wrapped up in one.
So let me talk about prevention, since that's an area that is really near and dear to you. To keep my eyes as healthy as possible, are there things that I can do from a prevention point of view? And just because I know you, and I know, like, I think of blepharoplasty, which is like eyelid
yes.
gooky, itchy. I mean, are there things that I can do to have really good, healthy eyes as much as I can?
You know, I mean, I think there are dietary things you can do, and eat your carrots, just like your grandmother told you to.
Is that true?
It is true. Yeah. I mean, carotene is one of the things we give people who have macular degeneration. So it is true. I mean, eating a healthy diet and staying active and taking care of your comorbidities of blood pressure and so on, those are all really important things generally. And your eye health is part, it reflects your general health. And that's why looking inside your eyes tells us a lot about your health. So, yeah, there are those things. Other things are that, you know, wearing the proper correction so you don't have headaches because you're not corrected for your refractive error, wearing sunglasses when you're out in the sun. I mean, that also is something that, that protects the skin around your eyes, which is a very susceptible to things like skin cancer if you're of the right skin type, those kinds of things.
What about cleansing the eyes? Is it just when you're in the shower?
You know, I think we talked about this condition. We didn't name it. The red-rimmed eyes that you have, the rheumy eyes, I think you said, that we really call that granulated eyelids or blepharitis. And yeah, that's certainly something that can respond to just good lid hygiene. And that's something that can be just a hot washcloth every day to start your day, just to sort of clean your eyelid glands off. And the heat kind of keeps those glands working well. So that helps in general.
All right. Let's talk a little. This is really fun. It's really interesting. And I think this is all really good common sense things. Last but not least, I do want to talk about my eyes and contrast. We've only got about a minute left, where I feel as though my views of color and my ability to see, I don't want to say depth perception, but I like it if there's a big checkerboard, I like the difference between the black and the white, that contrast.
Yeah. So unfortunately for you, Debbie, contrast sensitivity changes and color changes, perception of color are very commonly associated with developing the cataracts, which are the change in the lens inside your eye. And it's not uncommon. And I can tell you, I'll illustrate. I had a very prominent artist locally who was came in the day after his cataract surgery and said, he was so upset because of the color of his couch that he had chosen, and he was all about color perception and so on. So it's not uncommon for your, it's really, cataracts can cause a desaturation of color. So things are just not as vivid, which is why you seek out contrast and you like the contrast on a checker board.
Yeah, exactly.
And that is very, very common. So I wouldn't be surprised if that sort of natural kind of yellowing of the lens, and it, actually studies have been done of the master's artwork, you know, the Dutch masters, and they use a lot more color in their paintings as they get older because of that very thing.
How cool is that?
Yeah, that's a very interesting part of art history.
I love it.
What little I know about art history.
Well, hey, that was fun. It really is. In our last about 10 seconds, would you like to share a little bit about where we can find you or about your practice in specifically?
I mean, specifically, I'm in the Bishop Eye Center, and we provide care to the Lowcountry. And there are seven of us in that practice, optometrists and ophthalmologists, including a retina surgeon. So, and we have a presence here and out in Hardeeville. We're building an office in Bluffton. So we have quite a good regional presence. So,
well, you are amazing to interview. It is really fun. Again, I get to see two of his grandchildren every now and then. We do goat therapy together.
And they enjoy it.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's really kind of fun. It's fun. Well, I do appreciate you joining us. I appreciate all of you for joining us here on Aging in Place podcast for any stage in life. A wonderful week. Bye-bye. I'd like to introduce you to a friend of mine, Tracy. Tracy is naturally curious and always creative. And when we were doing the Aging in Place podcast, she said, there are so many quick tips that I can think of offhand. My response, who knew? She's going to be with us every week, giving us a quick tip and a hint that is a practical application.
Thanks, Debbie. X-ray vision, I wish. As much as you can, always use transparent storage. Whether it's jars, bottles, totes, crates, having the capability of seeing without opening makes tasks easier to manage. Kitchen cabinets will become more organized and bathrooms cleaner. Clear storage in your closets will make looking for your winter clothes simple. Totes come in all sizes, from shoe size to sleeping bag, and can be purchased just about anywhere. and make sure you purchase ones with lids. I actually color-coded my storage totes by the lids. Red lids mean Christmas, green lids for spring decorations, and clear lids for fall. Who knew we could see through all of our madness?
I really enjoyed our interview today with Dr. Ken Gleitzman. He can make a really complicated subject much easier to understand. My takeaway for today is this. If you have any kind of problem with seeing at night, with glare, with color contrasting, I think it deserves a trip into the ophthalmology office to find out if maybe you do have cataracts. It's never too early to stay healthy. Have a great week here on Aging in Place Podcast for any stage in life.
Aging in Place Podcast is hosted by Debbie Lyons and produced by Henrik de Gior. If you have any comments or questions, send an email to debbie@agingInPlacePodcast.com. We would love to hear from you. If you're interested in advertising or sponsoring this podcast, email us at pr@agingInPlacePodcast.com. Thank you for listening to Aging in Place Podcast.